This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 284, brought to you by Fandango, graphically, and iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 284. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with
Connor Kilpatrick
and
Josh Flanagan.
Why don't you just tell us the name of the comic book you'd like us to talk about?
Flashpoint.
You have selected X-Men Legacy.
Your pick of the week is Chew.
Oh man, nobody
starring
uses
Tony Chew and Tony Chew.
Nobody uses movie phone anymore, do they?
I don't imagine.
Does
the phone number still exist?
I called that number for 4 hours trying to get Phantom Menace tickets.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, and I got my tickets through the website. Anyway,
777 Filk.
Yeah. Anyway, so we are from the website iFanboy.com, not movie phone. iFanboy.com is all about comic books, where we read a bunch of comics every week. One of us deems one book as the pick of the week and writes a review of it on the website, and then we come here to the podcast to talk about it as well as all the other books that came out that week and hear what books you all in the iFanbase have been enjoying, and it's a fun plethora of comic book discussion. But before we get to the show...
What is a plethora?
Sorry. A quick reminder and a little bit of a warning. We're going to talk about what happens in the book, so we might, you know, some people consider that spoiling it, so we might mention what's going to, you know, specific events, specific twists and reveals and cliffhangers at the end of books. So if you haven't read your books, especially this week, press pause and come back later and listen. But if you have, feel free to listen and enjoy the mayhem. So that said, Josh has the pick, and Josh blew it again. Oh, no, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I'm totally
I know
kidding.
You are.
You keep getting the week where the big DC event comes out for the first time.
Oh, I wouldn't have picked a DC book, by the way, either. But anyway, but
no, what I'm saying is, it keeps happening.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't actually realize it this time, but I mean, there was. I have no consternation about this. I have no. I'm like, well, maybe I should have, but that wasn't the way it went down. I picked Chew number 27. If you've been an avid viewer of the video show, you would have seen us talk to John Layman and Rob Guillory, who only appear as a team, by the way, back in our San Diego coverage last summer. And he had mentioned that they were going to be doing this big skip forward in not only time but in issues. It would we're going to come out with 18, and then after that issue 27, and then after that back to 19, and it's going to make sense or not. And
which is awesome, by the way.
Yeah, and really that is the crux of, like, I got to the end of it and I was like, that's awesome. like that. And it worked, because the thing was, a lot of times I will pick up a comic book and I will start reading, and the first page or so I'll be like, I don't remember what was happening before. And then it clicks in and I'll know what it was. And with this one, I started right away and I was like, did I miss something? And then I saw the little blurb at the bottom. I was like, oh, I didn't, but I sort of did. Like, I thought it was really well done. It actually tapped into sort of that feeling that I think a lot of comic readers get, if they read a bunch of titles and, you know, some gets delayed or, you know, you have other stuff you're paying attention to. So what they did was, it's a gimmick. It totally is, where they skipped forward a bunch of issues and there's a new status quo, and they don't have to spend all that time explaining it and setting it up, because presumably that will have happened. I just got time mixed up in my head. That will have happened in the course of the regular issues when they go back. And it was really fun and well done. It's just
what I loved about it was that not only did they skip ahead, but they skipped ahead to part two of a five-part story arc. Yeah, which is like
it was a little extra.
Yeah.
We've said it many times. Chu is the most inventive comic on the stands, and this continues that.
Yeah.
There's no other book like Chu out there that's willing to take these kind of risks. Do things that are outside the box. They have a lot of fun with the book, which you know, often feel like these guys are writing the book with a gun to their head. But Chu is just purely enjoyable, and this is tons of fun. You could pick this up and enjoy this without knowing anything about the character.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, especially since most of the characters you know aren't in it, so it's a little easier. You know, we're taking one Tony Chu for another Tony Chu. The sort of main character becomes his sister, whose name is also Tony, spelled differently. Based on a different root name, and she's apparently an agent now, and the original Tony is in a coma, and we're just sort of thrown in the middle of this thing, and we bring back the idea of the Chogs, which are chicken frogs, and these are crossbred psychedelic chogs. Yeah, there we go. And it was just a really fun issue, and I'm kind of bummed now because I don't get to read 28 for a while,
for at least another year, right?
Yeah. You know, and Connor actually really nailed it, is that this book is a lot of fun, and it's really imaginative, and there's not a lot of books like that. And such the point, like, at the same time, though, that there are all these wacky ideas and fun concepts, underneath it is still the root of a well-told story and good characters. And it has that basis, so while it feels like you can sort of go off the rails a little bit, there's still a really strong foundation to hold everything down. You know, because there's no shortage of comics with wacky ideas in them. And if you... You know, you talk to a billion, you know, comic fans who will be like, oh, man, throw in a monkey, a robot, a pirate, and a ninja, and I'm there. And this is, I guess, sort of like an actual good real-world representation of something like that. Instead of using a bunch of cliches, they're just a bunch of, like, really original ideas. And, you know, it's stuff that I haven't seen anywhere else. You certainly don't see it, you know, outside of comics and also just done this well, and it just makes you really happy that people respond to it. You know, for an indie book, it does pretty well, and people are really responding to it, and it's been going on for not 27 issues now, but a lot of them.
15 issues, yeah. Well, and I think what's also the reason why they made this work was because while it was like a jump ahead a year, you know, it jumps ahead at least a year, if not more, in the storyline. There, you know, it had. While there was really only one or two or three characters that we recognized, and there was a lot of new characters and new people that were introduced, it had concepts that were true to the vision of the book and true to the tone of the book, as well as even like as minor as the flashback to Tony's sister when she was working at the International Telescope, which isn't the first time we've seen a remote location of people who go a little crazy.
Yeah, there's definite themes and overtures that have been consistent through the whole thing, which really make it feel like one piece,
right?
But again Rob Guillory,
oh, so good,
is
big claps,
fantastic. We highlighted a panel on the best panels feature, but there's a ton of great stuff in here, including the big doe eyes that Tony gives to her boss when she wants to get her way, which I had never seen sort of represented that way before in a comic. And that's, to me, it's just constantly proving that they'll try things you've never seen before. I mean, the very idea in the modern market that a comic will skip ahead 9 issues for no good reason and then we'll go backwards is crazy.
Well, you know what it actually really reminds me of? And you guys will laugh, but it reminds me of back in the early days of Image when all the founders swapped each other's books.
Yeah.
When, you know, like Jim Lee did Savage Dragon and Eric Larson did Youngblood, and like it was just a big mix up of it was in continuity. It was, you know, they all recognized the issue, and it was like, and it was like a fun, let's have fun with it kind of approach, which you don't see that much anymore these days. So,
well, you know, I was thinking about when I was writing about Rob Guillory is that, you know, the way that he does cartooning is just as valid as the way that, say, Jim Lee, for example, does cartooning. But because of, you know, the fact that 90-95% of the market is superhero books and serious ones at that, like, you just don't get to see fun cartooning. And it is a completely valid side of comic book artists. You know, it's like, it's just another way of doing
it. Who's saying that it's not?
You just don't see it very much. So a lot of people don't consider.
I feel like you saying that is already putting him, you know what I mean? Like, I never.
Well, there are certainly people who react to this book as if it should be drawn like Jim Lee. That certainly happens all the time.
Yes. Oh, really? And there are fans who you know, like, they can, like, good art and bad art. Well, good art has to be art that is heavily rendered and has excellent, you know, muscle tone and all that stuff. And it's not. Like, I consider what Rob Guillory does here to be every bit as impressive as any of the best guys in the industry.
This reminds me a lot of the artistic style of, like, the old Monkey Island games, the Secret of Monkey Island video games. Not the first two, but, like, the third or the fourth one. And, you know, while kind of like a video game kind of animation-y kind of thing, but it was still, you know, it's a way of cartooning, like you said, and it's so much fun. And I think his style, I can't imagine this book by any other artist because I think his style is such a part of it. You know.
But, you know, you'll get guys who are fan favorite artists, you know, people like, oh, well, you know, Frank Quitely or Steve McNiven, you know, they consider them at the top of, you know, top of the industry. And they go, those pages that you are great, you know, and these pages are just as good.
Yeah.
Is my point. And like, his skill is right up there with all of them. It's just a different style of it. And I would love to see more of this kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know,
does she have a power?
I don't know if they've named it.
Yeah,
when she bites things, she seems to be able to see the future of that person or thing that she's biting, as opposed to Tony, who sees
the past. Yeah, which would make sense then. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I love that she was an agent of NASA. That was just that. You glossed over that. But yeah, that was great. I mean, like, the fact that she dressed like Tony, but it's not the FDA, it's NASA. That was hysterical. Yeah. So
I love that it's all these minor agencies that have these, like, ridiculous federal powers in this book.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And it's the same environment, like the angry boss, you know, and the yelling, you know, I mean, it's the same scenario just with the girl, with the sister, which is hysterical. Yeah. So, great stuff. The only thing I worry about Chu is that it suffers from the Why the Last Man syndrome and the, you know, like, where it's just every issue is so good.
Well, the way that you get away from that, though, is that a lot of the issues have something in them that's unique that does make that stand out. I mean, we've made it Pick of the Week a few times at this point, and it's because each one – and it wasn't like, you know, like, it was good again. Like, there's something about each one that stands out, like, because they're pushing the boundaries and they're trying to put it, you know, something unique in it as often as possible.
Yep.
Cool. So that's the savior.
So, the big event of the week was DC finally unveiled Flashpoint. And now, Connor, did you read the Flash first or Flashpoint first?
No, I read Flashpoint first.
Okay, I read Flash first.
Even though you're supposed to read Flash first, it didn't really end up mattering in the end.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I got Flashpoint first, and I thought people were already talking about it. I decided to read it before I got spoiled because there's a big twist at the end, and we're going to talk about it in a second, but people were talking about the twist online.
Yep.
I didn't want that to get spoiled, so I just jumped right into Flashpoint without reading Flash first, which it didn't make a difference. At the end
of the day. It didn't make a difference. I mean, I feel like Flash 12 really kind of, you know, it set up the beginning of Flashpoint, but you didn't need to read it, which is how
let's get Flash 12 out of the way first, though, because there's less to say. Probably, I think again, we talked about this last time. The really disappointing thing is as great as Collins was in the past, his new style does not fit this book.
Yeah, it's sad. There was one panel that, like, really. It was really bizarre. It was Barry and Bart talking to each other. It was after Zoom killed future Barry Allen.
Right.
And basically what happens is that future Barry Allen thought that Bart was the anomaly, but turns out it was Zoom. And we find out that Zoom has mastered the Speed Force and now can alter his age.
And appearance, really. Yeah. He becomes a shapeshifter.
Yes, it's the first mention of this concept that, honestly, like, I feel kind of an idiot for not realizing, because I've heard Geoff Johns talk about this at panels and in our interviews and in interviews and stuff like that. You know, he's really fascinated by the idea of time.
Yeah.
And this was the revelation that Speed Force isn't about going really fast. It's about the manipulation of time.
Right.
Which is kind of awesome, which I love that kind of thing. But so there's that page where it's kind of all dark and dreary, and Barry's holding dead alternate reality Barry Allen's helmet. And there's one panel where he drew Bart and Barry, but it was just their costumes. There are no faces. Yeah, I was like, is that stylistic or was that on purpose? It was really weird.
Well, it's stylistic. It's supposed to be shadowy, yeah. But it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It just makes it worse when you've got a brief Manipole scene in the middle.
Oh, that totally threw me off. I was like, because all of a sudden I'm like, whoa, Collins got really good. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute, this is Manipole. Yeah.
So basically the thing is we find that Zoom is going to screw with Barry by playing with time. Cut to Flashpoint, number one, which is where Barry wakes up and finds his life is not what he remembers it. He wakes up having napped in the CSI room to find his reality has changed around him. The world is different. He's the only one that remembers, I guess, the old DC reality, which is what the event is in Flashpoint. Now, I'm sure we're going to have a very wildly differing opinion on the story, but I think we can all agree that the Andy Kubert art, which I was looking forward to because I like Andy Kubert, was all over the map.
All over the map.
I think at times it looked like Bagley. Yep. I think at times
it looked like Jim Lee.
Jim Lee. I think if you had told me there was eight different inkers on this, I would have believed you.
Yeah. No. Literally, it was. It's funny that you bring that up because there's one inker, Sandra Hope. Surprised. Yeah. But what was fascinating was that throughout the book, I was like, oh, that looks like Jim Lee. Oh, that looks like Bagley. Oh, that looks like McFarlane. Like it was like weird, like aping of styles all over the place, and it was like I don't know if he intended that or what, but it was just like there was very little to no consistency with the artwork.
It was wildly inconsistent, and you would get occasionally great Kubert stuff.
Yep.
I mean, I love the two page shot of Batman swinging over the city, and I loved a lot of stuff in the middle, but there was too much of just wild variation in the way characters looked. Barry looked different from scene to scene.
Yep.
There was that one weird close-up of his face that looked like Joe Quesada.
Yeah.
It just didn't look like – Kubert at all. It was just – it was bizarre. Yeah. Hopefully that's not some sort of meta-commentary on the changing appearance of people.
I don't know.
Which scene does he look like Joe Quesada in?
There's a close-up of his face. It's all in shadow when he – I'm looking for it right now. This is great radio. when he – All right, it's when he goes with his mother and they go to see Iris and he sees Iris as a husband or a boyfriend or something. And it's a really tight shot of his face.
Okay. No, I mean, it looked like Quesada drawing. It didn't look like – I mean,
not the character.
I thought you were saying he looked like Joe Quesada.
Oh, no,
what
no,
you,
no.
What you actually said makes a lot more sense. And I you know, that's my bad. I really was hoping to see that.
I thought the same thing. I'm like, he drew it looked like Quesada.
Oh, the panel looks like Quesada's art. So it was, I thought, the thing I thought we had a sure thing in was the art from Andy Kubert, who is a veteran. He's a very popular artist. He's a really good artist. And that was the most surprising thing to me. Now, I know we're going to disagree, but I really enjoyed the heck out of the story. I'm, number one, huge fan of alternate reality stories. When reality gets schismed, when there's Elseworlds tales. I'm always a big fan of everything has changed. Like the Wonder Woman story now I'm enjoying. Everything has changed. You've got to find a way to get back or you've got to figure out why things are different or just enjoying the different takes on characters. I really enjoyed all that stuff. And to me, this was a lot of fun, and I was really looking forward to the next issue. We'll talk about the twist in a second. But
now from my point of view, I'm right there with you. You know how much I love the Nail, like JLA the Nail, and I love all the great, you know, kind of I love the Age of Apocalypse with X-Men and stuff like that. But for me, something about this felt a little short, and I don't know if it was. And I thought Paul, who wrote a review on iFanboy.com of it, I thought he nailed it with the kind of thing where if you need to explain what's going on, then you're not doing it right. You know, and I almost feel as if there was like a lot of explain. Like it was very much this is the first issue and this is what you need to know.
I think that was a lot like Crisis.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was on purpose, and I think it was a good move because you can tell from the way they're marketing this book, they're in CNN, they're in USA Today, they're not really in the comics media, that they're trying to get people who haven't read comics in a while or have never read them at all reading this. And now we can talk about whether or not that's successful or not for another day, but that seems to be their intent. So if that's their intent, and I hand this book to someone who's never read a Flash book or hasn't been reading Flash in 10 years, then that style of writing is necessary. And that's another – I mean, we can make fun of that style of writing, but when Crisis wrote that, comics sold 10 times as many comics as they did now.
Yeah.
So what style is actually better in the end?
Maybe, but I don't think that – it depends on the audience that you're trying to attract though. And for me, this just feels like a version of what comics were and how they have done things traditionally and sort of plays into the idea that – comic books are written with a ton of explication and is none of the sort of subtlety that I think that the creators have sort of mastered over the years. It feels like a throwback. It feels like, to me, it felt like something that I have read before, if not in exactness, but at least in style. And I was really hoping for something, I guess, new or different. Now, I didn't feel that at all. It just felt like this is one of these stories.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be wowed, and I was like, all right.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. The thing is, I wasn't wowed at all. I wasn't blown away, but I definitely saw the potential.
Yes.
I love the different takes on characters. And so, like, I love the Shazam being broken
those
up.
That was a fantastic idea.
Genius. Breaking it up, you know, each of the letters being tied to an individual kid. Like, that was great. You know, I thought it was funny. Abin Sur looks a lot like the movie Abin Sur, you know, which is cool. I always love Cold. I always love seeing Wesley Dodds. The characters who I didn't know who they were or couldn't map back to DC, I hated. Like, I got really frustrated. Like, I spent a lot.
Yeah, I didn't worry about that because I figure either you're going to find out or it doesn't make a big
difference. Right, yeah, no, I know. But I'm just saying, for what my point of view, my what I'm going into it, I would like the outsider. Like, I was racking my mind. I'm like, who's this supposed to be? And, you know, and I thought they were talking about Batman. I thought it was like Batman and the Outsiders, you know? So I don't know. The thing is, I'll, of course, I'm going to keep reading it, you know, because this matters. It wasn't like, oh my god, blow my mind. Like, I gave it probably like a solid like 3.5, probably.
I just think if you're trying to attract a new audience, this is still playing constantly on the tropes of what we already know. It's a shock that, here's the spoiler, by the way, it's a shock that it's not Bruce Wayne, it's Thomas Wayne. But if these are new things to you, then what does that really mean? What sort of impact does that actually have? Like, a story should have its own impact, and this is relying on
everyone knows who Batman is. So right, if I hadn't said anybody who's never read a Batman comic, they're going to know it's a big deal that his father is Batman and not he's Batman, because everyone's seen the movie and everyone knows the character.
But I don't know if I could have told you Batman's father's name before like 2005.
Exactly.
But yeah. That's 5 years ago. I'm not handing the comic to anybody in 2004. I'm handing it to him now in 2011.
No, but I'm saying that's me. I mean, I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure I could hand this to somebody on the street and be like, "What's Batman's father's name?"
Mm-hmm. They'll find out in the story. I mean, it's all laid out.
But this is the end of the first issue. So if you get to the end of the first issue and you're like, what does that matter? I mean, you can have a passing knowledge of it, but it's not going to have the same impact.
Well, yeah. No, it's obviously not going to have the same impact as you will in a comic fan. But I'm saying the idea that it's not going to have any impact is ridiculous.
I mean, the fact that it's not Bruce Wayne does have some impact, but when I turned the page and I saw that, it's Thomas Wayne, like, I went, ooh, you know, like, it got the right reaction on me. But I just don't know how much it carries to a mainstream audience.
That's a different discussion. I don't think it's actually going to make it to a mainstream audience, but I see that's their intent to do it. Yeah. So I understand why they did it the way they did it. But whether or not it's successful, we'll find out later, which, you know, knowing the way things work, this probably won't be.
Right. All righty.
Everyone's trying to chase Civil War, which is what it's never going to happen.
Right.
On both sides.
Yeah. Well, we saw those Fear Itself numbers in April.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh. So I mean, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I'm looking forward to what it brings. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I think it's going to have a bigger impact than people realize.
We'll see once the miniseries start rolling out. We'll see once we get, you know, and this is a 5-issue series, so this is going to take us through the summer, and then come fall.
August. It ends in August, yeah.
Yeah, and then we'll see what happens come the fall, but it definitely is curious. My curiosity is peaked, that's for sure. So, but yeah, man, Kubert, all over, like the cover looks like a Jim Lee cover.
It was bizarre.
Yeah.
It was really bizarre.
Mark Silvestri cover.
Yeah, kind of. Anyway, well, for me personally, and admittedly I get caught up in the Marvel hype and stuff like that, but FF number 3 was totally my pick of the week. Because it was
pretty good.
It was really good. And it was funny because before I read my comics, I saw a post on Twitter that Hickman made, and it was just like, you know, I've been working on this book since whatever issue number. It's all coming, you know, this is where it's going towards. Like something along those lines. I forgot exactly what he said. And it was, you know, so we see the FF going out and inviting all of Reed Richards's and the Fantastic Four's key kind of villains or arch nemesises, inviting them to come to a symposium to discuss how to defeat Reed Richards, which is awesome. And it turns out because the League of Reeds is back and that they're cooking up something that's going to destroy the Earth, and so it's going to be up to the FF to stop them. And I love the League of Reeds. I love the League of Reeds that are left. I just revisiting that first story arc from Fantastic Four and seeing it, and not only that, but having it tie into all of the previous story arcs. You know, whether it's the New Inhumans or Old Atlantis and all that, all this sort of stuff, it all starts tying in together with this issue. And as a continuity nerd, and as a someone's been enjoying this since Hickman's first issue, it was giggling throughout the entire thing. It was awesome.
You loved Cyclops Reed, didn't you?
Yeah, he was pretty cool. I actually, you know who I like? I actually like Star Trek Reed the best. With the with the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is great stuff.
Yeah.
It continues. It wasn't quite as good as the first two, but it was still continued to be really, really, really good.
Oh, it was
great. I thought it was a really nice collection of scenes and little bits with everybody. You know, that like Connor, you actually I had meant to do a best week in panels of the same one that you picked, so I was glad that you picked it too, because it was just like, damn, that is that note is a wonderful moment.
And I love the wizard talking to the AIM guys. And I mean, like, it just like he totally got all the interactions with the various characters, and like talk about the widespread of people that they invited. You know, the High Evolutionary to the wizard to Diablo. Like, it was like, there were some surprises in there. I didn't expect some stuff. And then when it took so that's the first half of the book. And then when it takes the turn, after the Watcher reveals himself.
That's when you know. Oh,
yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Oh.
And then it takes the turn, and you see the we find out what Valeria did, and what she found out, and how she found out about the League of Reeds and what they're doing. Then like it was almost two stories. And yeah, it's totally setting up the next couple issues. But I loved it. It was so much fun. So
this is still one of the best books too.
Yeah,
this is a week where a lot of the best books of comics came out, including Batman Incorporated number 6 from Grant Morrison and Chris Burnham, who is one of the new regular artists on the book. And we talked to him on the Don't Miss show earlier in the week about this very issue. And then this one, Josh, I'm not the only one still reading this, am I?
No, I am reading it. I my only thought about this issue was that like this felt – why wasn't this the first issue?
It's a good question. It seems sort of came out of the Batman the Return special that came out before the series started, which was basically Bruce gathering all of his troops together into his massive army.
Because so far the first 5 issues have been, we start off in Japan and then we're in Argentina without really explaining. I mean, it's sort of vaguely, but this felt a lot more like setting up all the pieces and doing it a lot more, just efficiently. And it was a little bit of a bringing together the team kind of issue and saying where we were. And I really liked it for that.
I think if you haven't read this series or if you dropped off, you could come back onto 6 without a problem and not have read the first 5. It's totally
easily.
Beginning of the story issue. I love the gleeful, gleeful is probably too strong, but I love the Bruce Wayne is having fun with Batman Incorporated. I love the fact that he was on a chat room on the internet spreading rumors about Batman, and he was having a good time doing it, keeping everyone off their toes. And just the, I love the inventiveness of all these different characters and the Batman all over the world and the Joe Average from Pennsylvania.
Oh, that was fantastic. That was a wonderful villain.
That was totally a Grant Morrison villain.
Yep. Yeah, no, totally. I really liked the scene. It was very brief, but there was a scene with Tim and Bruce talking. So we're still partners because they've got each other. And it's like, yeah, of course. It's just a nice – like
this week's Red Robin, which they teamed up together.
Yeah.
So it's a nice thing to keep that going.
This should have happened earlier. This should have been I really think this should have been the first issue. It doesn't make sense to me that it wasn't. But, hey, what do I know? That guy's a genius.
So jump back on if you haven't left or if you're curious. Batman Corporate 6 is a great starting point.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So X-Men Legacy number 248 dealt with the aftermath of the Age of X event, which ultimately in all, a very similar to Flashpoint, and then it's an alternate reality, and it was very Age of Apocalypse-y kind of, and it was nice. It wasn't, it was well done. It wasn't amazing. It didn't change anything. It didn't matter.
What was the whole point of it?
Legion, Xavier's son's personalities went crazy, and they made a new personality that was Moira with powers, and she pulled everybody in and made them think they lived in this world, and now they're all dealing with the fact that happened. But
the Flashpoint world?
No, not the Flashpoint world. Joe Quesada's world. But the reason why we're talking about here in the longer version is because one of the characters that was in the Age of Apocalypse, not in the Age of Apocalypse, geez, the Age of X world, was Rachel Summers or Marvel Girl, who, if you remember, is in space with Havoc and Polaris.
Wait a minute.
Exactly. And now that they're all back to normal, there's an astral projection of her. She's stuck here. Basically, they explained what happened was that at the moment of Legion starting the Age of X world, Rachel was reaching out to Emma and Xavier in an attempt to try to send them a message because of something that was going on in space. And that moment, Legion tapped onto her, like, you know, psychic kind of thing, and made her a part of that world. And so now her astral portion is separated from her body wherever it is in space. And she's having this conversation with Cyclops, and basically Cyclops approves the mission to, you know, he convenes the science team and starts the mission to go find Havok, Polaris, and Marvel Girl. Finally.
All your questions will be answered. You can
finally, yes. I literally, it's 2 pages. Yeah, no, maybe 4 pages total of conversation. And not even four. 2 pages with Marvel Girl and Cyclops. And I, like, yelled. I was like, finally, Havok and Polaris are coming back.
So, you can stop asking them at the cons where the Havok and Polaris are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sir, you in the Flash t-shirt. Hi, Ron Richards. Yeah.
Where are Havok and Polaris?
Well, you heard me ask Kieran when I interviewed him for Uncanny. I'm like, do you know where Havok and Polaris are? Like, it's
I really did. He was not wrong.
Talk about the dangling. Dangling plot line that they just left hanging there for years. So,
clearly they're in Scarlet Witch's closet.
Yeah.
Now the Scarlet Witch closet stands alone.
Yeah. So anyway, so that's why X-Men Legacy number 248 was a big deal for X-Men fans. If you've been curious about where Havok and Polaris is, go to your comic store, pick up this issue, read these pages, check it out. You can see the beginning of this, and I'm really curious to see, where this adventure is going to go from, whether it's going to be in this book or another book or whatever. So, and the issue ended with Magneto and Rogue chatting again, and it's like, oh, you're going to go back to that well. But
Josh, take your ass to Mars.
So in the Light Week thing that we do on Tuesdays, we do it every day where one of us picks a book that you may or may not know about to maybe think about adding to your stack. I put Total Recall number 1 from Dynamite.
Which I was surprised by.
I like Total Recall a lot. It's a fun movie. I could say 2 weeks to you right now and you'd be like, two weeks. Exactly. It sticks with you. It's from that exact right point in our childhood. And it's exactly that kind of movie.
That was the first R-rated movie I saw in the movie theater that I snuck into with my friends.
So I was like, you know what? Let's try it. You know what? There's a good chance this isn't going to be good because a lot of times these kind of books aren't good. But let's try it. Let's see what happens. It's a big possibility of things that they could get right.
Yep.
I'm shocked anyone was paid for this.
Wow.
I don't remember the last time that I gave something 1 star, but I barely got through this thing. It was
so
just.
Do you feel bad about the about suggesting it in the Light Week now, or?
Well, you can't know. You know,
I
was like, let's try this.
Give it a shot. It's a risk.
Here it is. You make your choice, friends. It just masses of word balloons and explanations and. Art that you know kind of does the job, but then a coloring on top of it that is not a professional quality. So, there's one point where a panel was literally cut and pasted from the bottom of one page to the top of the next page. It was exactly the same, and I was like, come on.
So did you does the book pick up after the movie, before the movie? Where does
directly immediately after the last movie? Because remember, the oxygen is released and his eyes bulge out like Large Marge, and all of a sudden there is an atmosphere on Mars, and they kiss, and everything is great, and that is where we meet them. March 15th, 2084, Mars outside the Pyramid Mines.
Mars.
There is one page where it's a full page shot of sort of a business guy in a tie, and there are, 16 word balloons.
Wow.
Big ones, not little ones like done for dramatic effect. 16 blocks of text on this one panel page, and I just looked at it. I was like, who the fuck is going to
read
that?
So this is like TERF.
It was really, I was like, this is just amateur-y kind of stuff all the way through. And, you know, there's a lot you can do with this, and I realize that there is some legwork that has to be done with explaining where we are and everything, but wow. It was, I won't be reading the second issue is my point.
So is it ongoing or mini or what is it?
I'm not sure. Looks like it doesn't say. It says number 1. It doesn't say one of.
So does this dash my hopes for a Total Recall sequel or?
No, they're doing a reboot.
Are they doing a reboot? They are.
Reboot's not the same as sequel though.
Yeah, true.
They're doing a reboot.
So it happened. Yeah, it happened. It was a comic book.
But hey, sometimes you gotta give it a shot. You never know.
I do not regret it.
Yeah.
I regret nothing. That you can just sort of rip into every once in a while and just go, I'm sorry. This is not professional quality work. We're used to a professional quality work enough that.
Who are the creators? I'm sorry if you
forgot. Vince Moore and someone else I don't know.
Oh, that's painful.
It was not. Let's move on.
I wonder how much that Total Recall option costs.
I don't know. I mean, it could, it could have been so cool, and I wanted to have fun reading it and being like, get your ass to Moss over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
And pulling that thing out of your nose and Quaid.
That movie was fantastic. I love that
movie.
Yes,
creepy baby Quato, three boobs.
That movie had everything going for it, everything.
Whenever we have to go through the scanner in the airport, I think of their scanner in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they have that one? I don't need to be holding my hand up at like a diaper.
Yeah. 2 weeks.
Surprise.
Awesome.
Right? See, everyone's excited right now.
Yeah, totally excited. Like, yeah.
Then I read it.
I kind of want to watch it now.
Yes, you do.
I did buy the special edition DVD that came in the metal tin in the shape of Mars.
Huh? Uh-huh. So I don't like
the shape of Mars?
Yeah, it's like
I didn't get it because you couldn't put it on the shelf at all.
Yeah, I know. I've regretted the purchase ever since.
So. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Fuck you,
Let's watch that and then Running Man.
Yeah, oh, Running Man.
Running Man
too.
I did buy.
Yeah, Running Man is great.
Does not hold up as well as you might hope.
I just watched it about 2 weeks ago. It was on TV. It's
Richard so much- Dawson, right?
Yeah.
Stabs him in the back with a pen.
That's a Stephen King story, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Very Richard prescient.
Yeah. Good stuff. Wow.
See how happy the concept makes us? It's like that Jurassic Park comic book. Just all over everything.
Oh, that's too bad. Yep. All right. Well, then, this is a great time to talk about giving away good comic books. Right, Connor?
Yes, we're doing a May giveaway from iFanboy members. If you may have seen this on iFanboy.com, we've talked about it in the last couple of shows. This week, we're giving away two Image Comics prize packs. Winners will be announced at the end of the show. Last week, we gave away two indie prize packs, so a bunch of indie books. And then after that, we're giving away some Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes DVDs, and we're giving away some Thor Fandango gift cards, courtesy of Fandango, Rob.
Yes, so now that Thor has come out, hopefully you all saw it and enjoyed it and bought your tickets on Fandango. But don't forget, you can still buy tickets to see Thor again or any other movie out on Fandango. And the Fandango has given us four $25 gift cards, Thor limited edition, Thor photos on them, so you can get a picture of Thor or Mjolnir or whatever you might want. And those gift cards can be used to buy tickets to any movie, not just Thor. So with X-Men First Class coming up, make sure you get to Fandango and order your tickets in advance. Don't miss out on that first screening. Fandango is your place to get movie tickets online. So, and in order to win any of the great giveaways, you got to be a member. So go to ifanboy.com/store where you can sign up for a membership. And we will announce the winners at the end of this show.
Exciting. Cross your fingers. It might be you.
Yes.
Now everyone needs to calm down.
Still walking.
And release. Now bring the hounds back in that you've released. Okay. Superman loves America again.
Oh, really? He's back?
He's back on the America train. He's still walking America, but he loves it as well. So everyone who freaked out about him renouncing his citizenship in that little one-shot story that'll never be referenced again in Action Comics 900, at the end of this issue, he gives a nice little soliloquy about how great America is.
Yep.
Wow, I didn't see that coming at all.
Interesting.
Actually, I did.
In this issue, he's in Las Vegas, and he loses all his money at the craps table, and then he
No, that would have been awesome, though.
Yeah, I want to see that story a lot. Like, he's just all right, you know what, one more. I can get this back. I can get this back, and like he just goes on a bender. I want to see that story.
He keeps calling Bruce for a loan.
Yeah, come on. You know I'm good for it. Come on.
Bruce is like, on a reporter salary? So in this issue, he runs into Livewire in Las Vegas, and her powers are electricity-based, and her powers are overloading her, making her go crazy. So he flies back to Metropolis, which feels like cheating, flies to the Fortress of Solitude. Which
feels like cheating.
Comes back to Las Vegas, grabs with his old, awful electric blue suit that he wore briefly in the 90s.
Oh, nice.
And gives her the suit, puts it on her. It fits her somehow.
By the way, that wasn't that briefly, by the way. That was years.
In my head, it's briefly.
I like the blue suit.
Yep.
And then she wears it as that's her new suit now. She wears the suit to control her electric powers. And that was basically
the story. Did the S on it?
Well, yeah, but then she changes it to an L with her powers, which apparently also work on cloth, which makes change
well,
the L.
Well, was that suit actually cloth, or was that suit some sort of conductive material?
It's a conductive material.
Yeah, thing, yeah,
so. I felt like she was in every episode of the animated series.
Yeah, she was really annoying. Was. Yeah.
It was awful. Her and fucking Metallo. And I like Malcolm McDowell.
Was great.
He was, but they overused him.
Yeah, maybe, but
that show. Yeah, I agree.
So then, at the end, he lets her go instead of bringing her in, despite all the property damage she's caused, and that's what causes this soliloquy about how great second chances are, and you're innocent until proven guilty, and all this stuff about that's great about
you
America.
You can wreck a major American city, cause millions or even billions in damages, and I will give you a second chance with my autonomy. I guess that doesn't make sense.
We've all made mistakes. We get a second chance. That's what makes America great. That's what Superman says.
All right.
Good. All right, Superman. Yay. So is the national nightmare over now? Or?
No, still July at least.
Oh, God.
Fox News will be doing a follow up on this, right?
No.
In July, the July solicits, he's hits Portland. So I assume, unless he's why.
He's going to go to Portland to play kickball?
Yes, on his bike with no gears.
Yeah, exactly. He's gonna get a Lebret piercing, and then he's gonna fucking white belt.
He's gonna get a new suit. It's organic. His cape's organic. It's made of hemp.
Oh God, that's so funny. Oh,
wear Superman shoes. He's not wearing them anymore.
And then get a job in comics.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. That's really funny.
It's been 2 years it's been written now, Josh.
Yeah, it has. This was the last one was the crazy Mr. Bun adventure of the stuffed rabbit, sort of off the main thing, and then this is coming back, getting the troops back together, and sort of getting back on track for moving forward. Just a really fun issue. Basically, Tommy's been gone for 3 months in the stories that he was trapped in, and he came back and he meets Lizzie and his and finds out about why his other buddy's a vampire now, and you know they go to steal some things, and then the bad guys reveal themselves, and we, you know, Tommy's like evolved. I feel like this is hitting where it's, I don't know if it's act two, but it's definitely like an act change. But then another villain reveals themselves, and it was good. It was again a really fun issue. Like, it's one of these, for whatever reason, I don't look forward to this book, but when I read it, I enjoy it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, yeah, this book.
I think sometimes when interview Mike Carey, you should open with that line.
You surprise me because I always think I don't want your book anymore, and then I do. So I don't know what that says about you. It's good in the end, but it doesn't sound it.
Yeah.
I quite enjoy it when I read it in trade.
Yeah,
no. Ron, tell the people what was awesome this week.
Star Wars number 6 was awesome. Was possibly my runner-up to pick of the week this week. Chris Roberson, Carrie Randolph, and Stan Lee, apparently. This science fiction story is awesome, and it took a great twist at the end, which I didn't see coming, which I was like, oh, this is genius.
Didn't see coming, and it makes the story about 100 times more interesting.
Exactly. Basically, the main character who we've been following, the writer from Earth, who finds out that the things that he was writing about are actually real, he's in space, and he finds out that he's actually from space, and he's been part of this whole, you know, this whole kind of legacy, and he gets this gauntlet, and he gives him this armor and his powers, and people react to him, because it turns out that his dad, to quote the last panel, his dad was Space Hitler.
You don't want to be Space Hitler.
Yep. He finds out that he's, you know, this whole time he's been on the run from these aliens. He's been protected by this elite guard of troops, and he's the heir to the, you know, to the leadership of this race. And we find out that they're not the good guys.
Yeah,
they're actually they're the bad guys, and he's the son of Space Hitler. Is what he says. His gauntlet is like a swastika symbol to the whole, you know, universe.
Yeah. And what I love is the language that these. So the symbol is like a big fist. And the woman who's been helping him, she's explaining. She's like, you know, your father ruled with an iron fist, but it was in people's best interest. Without him, the human race would have been subject to the whims of the lesser races.
Yeah.
She's like a tiny – she's like a little cute Himmler.
Yeah, exactly.
And it really turned the whole story in its head and made it so much more interesting. I mean, it was really fun before, but now it's like really good.
Yeah, because the dude said it. I mean, in the narration, he's like, I thought I would be like a I'm not the spacefaring adventurer. I'm not the hero come to rescue the space princess. I'm the son of Space Hitler, which is awesome. So
I like that it turns the conventions of you're constantly used to seeing the big scary monsters and going, well, those must be the bad guys.
Yep.
And they set you up for that for a while and then slammed you down.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
He's basically wearing a swastika on his fist the entire time.
Yeah, without knowing it. And that's why everyone freaks out when they see him and all this. Oh, it's great. Genius. So Chris Roberson, good job, man. So and of course, it still had the awesome little flashback on the front, like the dot pitch kind of. I love when they this book is really inventive in both art and story. And, you know, and Carrie Randolph and Mitch Gerard's on color, like, they do a great job on it. So.
Pick this up. It's only 6 issues in.
Yeah, seriously, go back and pick it all up. It's really good. So, cool.
Now Fear Itself.
Fear Itself. I can finally. I've been waiting to talk about Fear Itself.
I had the whole transition ready, and then
Two things about this. One, Mike Norton back at Marvel, which is always good to see, and not only back at Marvel, but drawing Gravity, the character him and McKeever created, which is always awesome. But reading this issue, and I picked it up because Norton was back, and I wanted to see how he did. made me realize that by dropping Avengers the Initiative all those years ago, there is a whole grouping of characters in the Marvel Universe I know nothing about.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
And this book is all about those people. And I'm like, I don't know who these people are. I don't know what their story is. I don't. There's one point where
Will Shoebox get back together with Crankshaft?
Yeah.
What?
No, exactly.
I don't know. This is G.I. Joe.
There's one scene. Well, the premise is basically is that, you know, due to Fear Itself, all the heroes are strapped. And so Steve Rogers reaches out to Prodigy, who is one of the remember the spider? Remember
Strap? They have guns?
No. Remember the 90s when Spider-Man disappeared and the reign of the Spider-Man happened?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that? One of them was Prodigy. And so
Ricochet. And
so it goes back to Prodigy, who was working for the government, and says, I need you to lead. You know, I need you to, you know, call heroes and call, you know, tap into the initiative and pull together heroes. And so there's one two-page spread where he's recruiting them in Washington, D.C., and there's all these people. And aside from Firestar, Gravity, and Rage – I don't know, and the Order, the guys in the Order were there in the background. I don't know who any of these people are. Like Thor Girl? Really? Is she Asgardian? I know nothing about these people. It's just,
you're asking the wrong people.
Yeah. So I just
you don't know.
Yeah, well. Exactly. I just thought it was really funny that, like, me, Marvel guy, I'm like Red Nine, Ultra Girl, Thor Girl, Stunt Master. I was like, who are these people?
I think they're G.I. Joe.
I know, yeah. So, yeah, interesting.
You want to talk about something that isn't happening in any other comic book? It's pretty easy to talk about Northlanders number 40, I think. Right down to the cover, if you look, the name of the story is much bigger than the logo of the book itself.
Yeah, yeah. What blew me away about Northlanders was somehow it's got to be a combination of Brian Wood and Will Dennis, but the artist they put on this book,
yeah,
Matthew Woodson, and we did a profile of him on the site recently. This guy's the real deal. This guy's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like the art blew me away in this issue.
This is looking at it right now. This is actually exactly the opposite of what I was talking about in that Total Recall book. Is that he's just letting it breathe. There's no words when they don't need to be words. You know, which fits for the story. Obviously,
yeah. Yeah.
Some stories need a lot of words, but and I it's possible some readers would look at a book like this and be like, I just read it in 10 minutes. What was the point? But to me, this was like the essence of what makes graphic storytelling interesting.
Yeah,
beautiful and. Airy and well paced and just a single story. Like, again, go read this one. Just this one. Just try it out and be like, wow.
Northlanders, seriously, is the best book that you're not reading. Like, you should go read it. Like, it's just great, great comic graphic novel storytelling. And, you know, and it's period piece and it takes place in this time period. You know, but it totally it's great. Every issue does not fail. So,
Connor,
and often some dude gets chopped up.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this one.
Well, much like Total Recall, I picked John Byrne's Next Men number 6 as my Don't Miss Light Week book this week on iFanboy. If you recall, I read the first issue and didn't like it, so I didn't read it beyond that. But then I saw the cover for this issue and I thought, there's no way.
There's no way.
Read this. Josh and I are big fans of the buffs of the Civil War and the Lincoln assassination story, and this cover featured...
Big fan of the Lincoln assassination.
Lincoln sitting there with John Wilkes Booth pointing a gun at his head, and behind him, one of the characters from Next Men pointing a gun at his head. And first of all, I love the repetition in that cover, so I figured I'd give it a shot. I picked this up and read it, and it was constructed in a way where I didn't quite know exactly what was going on, but I could follow the story well enough. This character from the cover, whose name I can't remember anymore, she's in Civil War time. I don't know why.
That's
but
awesome.
There she is, and she's trying to make her way to Washington. She picks up a little slave girlfriend. They make their way. They escape from a bunch of troops. They get to Washington. She tries to warn them that Booth is going to assassinate Lincoln. She's black, so she obviously there's an added layer of racial interest in this, and no one will believe her. So she actually, at the time, you could just walk into the White House and, you know, talk to the president.
Really?
Yes, yeah. That's actually true.
Oh, wow.
So she goes to the White House and tries to convince them that Booth, who's at the time the most famous actor and one of the most famous actors in the world, is going to kill the president, and they're all like, "You know, she's nuts." And
what about Lincoln, Seward? Did they try to warn about him at least?
No. Then Lincoln comes out. The Lincoln betrayal is actually kind of accurate from what I can tell. He was kind of folksy and funny, and he had a lot of stories to tell. But she can't convince anyone that this guy's going to kill Lincoln. So she goes to the Ford Theater to stop him with her modern pistol, and confronts Booth in the stairwell, and he's like, "What is that toy you're waving at me?" And then she shoots him in the gun. The bullet stops in midair, and that's the cliffhanger.
That's awesome. A good cliffhanger. All she would need to do would point out the block of wood that he used to block the opening. They found
or do many, any number of things, but
that's true. That's true. Stop him in the alley when he goes to drop off the horse, and that guy got put in jail. Anyway.
Yeah. So she goes to the Force Theater. There's a brief scene with Booth, and then from actually reading a prose book about the assassination right now. My third one that I've read in the last year. So I've got a lot of the details in my brain at the moment. So it was interesting. It was as bad as wacky as I was hoping it would be, which was
good.
Bringing a modern person in the world with a 9mm pistol to stop the Booth assassination is about as wacky
as it gets. That's for sure.
And it's Boy. Burn. Burn is burn. The art's still, still pretty solid burn.
So he's probably going to stick with it and tell the story of America had he not been assassinated, because that would be a quick.
I imagine the bullet stopping in the air is because they can't change the time stream, but I don't know. I don't read in the book. That's just my assumption from reading comics for 30 years.
You're going to read the next one.
Yeah, I can't. Kind of have to. I mean,
yeah, you have to report.
I wouldn't have, but I want to know what happens next with the bullet hanging in the air. Although the cover for the next issue shows the other characters in Roman times, which not as interesting.
he's crazy.
Power of the Great Cover. It was a great cover.
Yeah. That was a good cover. I thought about picking it up myself when I saw the cover, but my store sold out because they ordered two. No, I don't know how many they ordered, but yeah, nobody's buying it. So.
Oh, Boots.
Yeah. All right, cool. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week, and a whole lot of other books came out this week, and you all went and bought your comics and read them and wrote your own reviews and did your own ratings. And I want to highlight the top five pick of the weeks according to the iFanboy audience. Josh, you want to take us through them?
I will. Number five, this is at the time that we recorded. Number five, Love and Capes Ever After, number four, with a 4.9% rate. Wow, by the way.
Strong showing, yeah.
Yes. That's a really fun book.
Yeah, that's a great book.
Number four was my pick of the week, Chew, number 27, with 9.1%. Number three, Journey into Mystery, number 623, with a 14.2%.
Everyone's loving what Kieran's doing on that book, by the way.
Yes.
The last issue was it the first or second?
Yeah,
it was
a lot of buzz on Journey into Mystery.
Batman Incorporated, number six, with a 21.8%. And no big surprise, Flashpoint, number one, at 31.3%. Methinks a bit of wishful thinking.
Possibly. You get caught up in the hype. It's easy.
People actually enjoyed it who aren't you two.
Sure, yes. Yeah. I can understand that. The Lord knows we've all gotten caught up.
I think there's a lot of wanting to like it a lot. Maybe they did. Or, the people certainly have different tastes than I do. I accept that very much.
This matters. All right, so on to the reviews, and some of you wrote some reviews of your comics. We want to highlight some of the other reviews that were written about books that we didn't talk about. First one comes from Comic Book Chris, who reviewed New Mutants number 25. He gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. At a time of recording, less than 1% of you made it your pick of the week. And what Comic Book Chris has to say is that I love the idea, and so far the execution of this new direction for the New Mutants. I love the idea of reintroducing past and forgotten Matt stories and characters to new readers. The bar is set quite high by starting out with Nate Gray, since he's, the greatest. But if anyone can pull this off, it's Abnett and Lanning. I don't know if I agree with the Nate Gray being the greatest, but I definitely agree that I love the direction of the idea of, the New Mutants are going to be a team that basically ties up all of the various loose ends that have been left behind by the X-Men, which is great. Abnett and Lanning's first issue, first time I've read them writing the X characters, way more chatty than I was used to. And like they had that Guardians of the Galaxy banter, and like it opens up on a fight scene, and there's like a lot of banter going on, and I realized that's just because these characters haven't been written that way recently, but that's really how they were originally written. So once I realized that, I was like, oh, excellent! Like it made me point out how off the characterization and the writing of these characters have been for the past few years. So it was nice.
But you enjoyed it.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was great. It was really good.
Did you like X-Man back in the day?
I didn't mind him. I mean, he came out of Age of Apocalypse, and I read X-Men as a book for the whole run. Mm-hmm. I don't love him. I don't hate him. He's just one of those guys that are out there. So
okay,
yeah.
You tolerate him.
Yeah, I tolerate him. Yeah, but not even like that's got a negative connotation. It's just like he doesn't bother me. He's okay by me.
Fun Crusher read Arkham City number one, gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. Nobody has this as pick of the week. And he said, better than expected, by far. I'm really glad I made the last minute decision to pick this one up. The story, after one issue, is a solid Paul Dini Batman story, and the art will grow on you by the end. If you played the game, you loved it, it will definitely add to the enjoyment of the issue.
I believe the title is Batman Arkham City.
Yeah, Batman Arkham City, sorry. And this is based off the continuity of the video game Arkham Asylum and then the upcoming sequel Arkham City. Yeah. Connor, did you read this?
I got it. I don't A, I've never played the games. B, I don't normally read video game tie-in books, but it was Paul Dini writing a Batman book, so I figured
I'd give Well, he wrote the game, too.
Yeah, so I figured I'd give the first issue a shot, because why not? And it was fun. I don't know anything about the story of the game. It takes place in between, but there's enough information for you to sort of understand where these characters have been and where they are now. There was some sort of big riot or something.
That's really all you need to know. There was a riot at Arkham. Batman beat them.
The whole city got caught up in it, and that's all you really need to know. And it is fun. It has a vibe of a bit of a darker animated series story because it's its own continuity. It doesn't have to worry about anything, and it's but the game's a little bit edgier than the cartoon was. So it was good. It was Joker, Harley Quinn, and Batman, written by Paul Dini, which is, you know, he created Harley Quinn. So there you go.
I liked that. I liked that it was just a Batman unencumbered by anything else.
Yeah,
you know, any other stories. So that's always good. Which is, you know, when Paul Dini really shines in that instance.
It was really good. It was solid. If you like Paul Dini Batman stories, you don't have to have played the game to enjoy this. I've never even played a second of the game, so and I enjoyed it.
Cool.
Pick it up.
So go to ifanboy.com/comics, and you do your pull list and come back and rate and review your books, and you might get a book highlighted on the show next week. So make sure you do that.
Email time. Andy from Cincinnati, Ohio, writes and says, with the inevitable success of this season's comic book movies and the Pixar and DreamWorks animated films, I'm wondering why comics have not used this form of filmmaking to tell their stories. The Incredibles was extremely successful, and this would be a way to tell stories that would not work in live action. I think a book like Bone or Mouse would be amazing as a Pixar film. Are comics using this form to adapt their books? If not, why? And finally, what other comics would work as an animated film? And I think he has it backwards. Comics are not choosing to not be an animation. It's the animation just gets to choose what stories they're going to make.
Right, and they'd rather do their own. Pixar would rather do their own stories than do an adaptation. Have you ever seen Pixar do an adaptation?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen Pixar do an adaptation?
Oh,
well, there was the one. Oh,
I thought I was being accused of something.
But DreamWorks wouldn't be against it. But then again, the DreamWorks ones aren't as good.
Yeah.
Well, Pixar. I mean, the way that Pixar works is they're a full in-house studio. They come up with a concept, they write the script, they animate, they do the whole thing, and that's why they're not doing it. I guess there could be a crossover with Marvel there, but
DreamWorks has had a couple of hits, hasn't they?
Yeah, but DreamWorks.
Dragon was great.
Which one was that, Connor?
How to Train Your Dragon.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, DreamWorks.
No, it was.
Yeah.
But they sort of throw a lot more concepts out there, you know, and some of them are really good, and some of them are forgettable. Whereas, like at Pixar, it's like every effort is a huge thing with a bunch of, you know, really talented people. It's just a little different.
It's not up to comics to do that, to make these movies.
Yeah, it's a good question because you would think that it would be, you know, we have a society now that, you know, that they accept some animated movies, but it's still those animated movies are largely thought to be for kids. I think
by the Academy. I mean, they're still that's just the way it's
exactly.
to do.
Yeah.
So that's one reason. So if you're Marvel, and you've got this other live action franchise full of movies, I think you're better off making a live action movie because you know that people like them and you can put a recognizable star in them. So that's more bankable right away. I'm guessing that's why they haven't done it. They've done sort of the cheaper regular animation. But, you know, at the same time, you're not wrong. Like, if you took the technology that you put behind something like The Incredibles, it would be a really cool way to do a lot of these superhero stuff that we've never seen. And, like, a Fantastic Four movie would be great.
And it's – well, that was called The Incredibles. They're not doing animation. I mean, there's a lot of animation projects that are happening in comics. They're just not of the scale of theatrical releases.
Yeah, the TV stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Marvel TV animation.
A lot of direct to video, you know, like the Doctor Strange one and all that, you know, like they're playing with it. It's just that the amount of money it takes to make back on a theatrical animation release, you know, like I agree with you. I would love to see Bone as a beautiful animated movie. That would be amazing. It'd be epic. I don't know if it would make $100 million. You know?
Could though. That actually I think has the possibility.
Yeah.
If you did like three movies, you know, Lord of the Rings, but Bone, be great.
That would be great. That'd be awesome.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, I love Bone. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
But ultimately, I think that there's more cachet in a live action film for Marvel than there is an animated film.
Oh, and yeah,
I think,
totally, with the celebrity and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And I think Pixar's, unless someone forces them to make a Marvel movie, I can't see them doing it. Like, I don't know how the deal works, but I don't think anybody can force Pixar to make anything. So
they have too much clout.
Yeah.
Speaking of Bone, did you see the 20th anniversary thing they put together that they're selling?
No.
It's insane. It's this box set. They only did 2,000 of them. This box set of the one volume, I think the color version, the cartoonist DVD, the documentary about Jeff Smith, All these like little pewter figurines, a print, they made an actual coin with Phony Bone's face on the front of it. Mm-hmm. Or no, not Phony Bone, the other one, the one with the
Bone
star.
Bone.
Smiley
Bone.
I think it was Phony Bone. I think that's what it was. It's like if you're a Bone fan, it's $350, but it's amazing.
Have you seen The Cartoonist?
No, I haven't yet. It's been on my list. I need to get it.
It's actually just a taped conversation between Scott McCloud and Jeff Smith on a stage at a school. It's pretty good though.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah, Phony Bone. It's a 22-carat gold-plated coin with Phony Bone's head on one side and Phone Bone on the reverse, giving the dates Bone number 1, July 1991, and the 20th anniversary, July 2011. And for $1,000, they're selling 50 of all that box set plus a original Jeff Smith Bone art piece for $1,000. Like, it's wow. It's beautiful. Mm. Anyway, sorry. I love Bone. Okay, cool. All right, on to the next
huge
email.
Huge Bone fan.
Our next email comes from David from West Virginia. He says, "Hey guys, I started reading comics about a year ago thanks to the Blackest Night event. I'd never bought a comic before then, and now I'm an avid fan of DC and Marvel comics. So far, I've read Siege, Civil War, and Secret Wars. I saw your comic event video podcast, and I'm hoping you can suggest some other great events." Oh, wow.
Mm.
This is the reverse question we normally get.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So what were good events recently? Siege was a great one. That was a good one.
Which ones did we talk about on the show?
Yeah, those ones. Go and watch the show again, then take notes on it.
I don't remember that show at all.
Well, you know, right now you're seeing the beginning of a couple events right now. So if you want to get on Flashpoint and Fear Itself, those are two that are going on. So you want to be involved in the sort of the, you know, as it goes on in the zeitgeist, then this is actually the summer for it. You know, other than that, like if you go back and you could read, we talked about this in the show, but my favorite one was the sort of Gotham City cataclysm and aftershock and all those sort of the earthquake of Gotham City era.
Hey man, Age of Apocalypse ages very well. Surprisingly, I mean, no, it really does. I was going back, I was looking at it the other day, and the Age of Apocalypse is a great X-Men event. Really, again, similar to Flashpoint, you know, rethinking the characters and all that sort of stuff. Very cool.
Who was in charge of Marvel back then?
Bob Harris.
Who's in charge of DC now?
Oh, Bob Harris. Yeah, interesting. Crisis on Infinite Earths. Talk about an event. That's the event that started them all. So
yeah, I really enjoyed Infinity Crisis when I went back and read it. I thought that was fun.
Yeah.
And
you mean Identity Crisis.
I meant Infinity Crisis.
Infinity Gauntlet.
No,
Infinite Crisis.
Infinite Crisis.
Well, yeah, I can see I could get that mixed up.
Yeah.
Infinite Crisis. I thought was pretty.
It was really good. Read all in trade.
Yeah, it definitely was. Identity Crisis, I don't consider an event. It was a miniseries.
No, yeah, that wasn't an event. But you were saying Crisis, so I didn't know what you were talking about.
Yeah.
Because so, yeah, you got it wrong. You got it wrong, okay?
It was Final Crisis, but I wouldn't read that on its own. I'd read that other one first and then go back. I'm trying to think. I mean, if you want to read the original, like go find the trade of the Kree-Skrull War.
Yeah.
That's the beginning of all those. But that's, you know, 60s sort of stuff.
Or the Fantastic Four, Coming of Galactus.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's talking about on the show.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. So if you have any questions, you can choose the email at contact@ifanboy.com.
Good. We are part of Graphically, a digital comics. I don't know what the next word is for
Wonderland.
That. Ever. Yes, a digital comics cornucopia with well over 3,000 comics from so many publishers, but including Marvel, Top Cow, Boom, IDW, Red 5, Marcoge. I could keep going. Many, many comics. Pretty much any kind of comic you want, it's going to be on there. With believe me, more coming up. Some really good stuff coming up.
Yeah.
You'll definitely be able to find a very good taste of all sorts of different types of comics. And the good part is you can sort of consume them any way that you want. You can read them on the web. Which is I like doing that a lot. You can read them on your Android device or your iOS device if it's an iPhone or an iPad. There's the app which has sort of some extras on some things. We just did some commentaries for Top Cow on the Artifacts issues, the first three with writer Ron Mars and publisher Philip Sablik. And there'll be all sorts of things like that. Some stuff have extra, you know, penciled pages and colored pages. So you can see the process and script pages and all sorts of things like that. And also you can interact with people and comment on the pages and on the different things going on. And it's a whole community and not just a way to read books. But there are a lot of books if you want to do that. So go to graphically.com for more information.
And there's some super cool stuff coming down the pipe. We got a new version of the website, of the Graphically website, that's going to be coming out very soon. And if you want to get notified as soon as it comes out and be one of the first people to check it out, go to betasignup.graphically.com. That's betasignup, all one word, .graphically.com. And there you can give us your email address, and we'll let you know as soon as the new website launches. And you can earn a beta tester badge on your Graphically profile. So it's pretty cool. So go check it out.
I want a beta tester badge.
Yeah, you get something. You get a different kind of badge.
And you can follow Graphically at twitter.com/graphically, and then you can keep up with all that stuff, like Top Cow Tuesdays, for example. Yep. We get discounted books every Tuesday. Try something new.
All right, on to the voicemail, right? We got time for one voicemail? Can we sneak it in?
One voicemail.
Let's do it.
All right.
Hey, fanboys. This is Muhammad from Virginia. I've been reading Avengers: A Children's Crusade, and I've been wondering, what's up with Wolverine, like, really wanting to kill Wanda? I mean, the Avengers are all... You know, they've been like, oh, we can, you know, address this problem. We have to address this problem. But Wolverine's been all about killing Wanda and her kids. So, yeah. What's that all about? Thanks.
No one would tell him what's in the closet. He got madder and madder and madder. Then when he asked, they just brushed him off like it didn't matter, like it wasn't a thing. And I...
Totally. Sorry. A thing. No. Wolverine's bloodlust for Wanda makes sense, because if you go back and read House of M and the end of House of M, Wolverine got majorly fucked up in House of M. People tend to forget that. Wolverine was one of the people who got the most screwed up in that when they came out of House of M, all of his memory blocks were gone. So he remembered everything. So all the defenses and all the coping mechanisms he's put up to deal with all the shit he's gone through in his life were gone. So he woke up to a world that, like, imagine a
world of hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
but also he's always been about vengeance.
Yep.
And doing the right thing. And to him, the Scarlet Witch not only fucked his shit up, but fucked everybody's shit up.
Yep. And you don't do that. Yeah. So,
and protecting, like, the kids and the young mutants, he's always been very protective like that. And she took that away from a lot of them. And I think that wasn't okay.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all that, basically.
Just to touch on the earlier question, actually, House of M and Avengers Disassembled are also two really good and pretty relevant things to go back and read.
Oh, totally. Yeah, totally.
House of M was lots of fun. Yeah. So, Olivier Coipel.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, and if you like Siege, you'd like House of M because it was Coipel.
Yes.
Yeah. So if you have any questions, you can call us on the voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. And we've got other podcasts, not just this one. Every Monday we release iFanboy Don't Miss, where we talk to a creator about a book that's coming up. This past week, Connor talked to Chris Burnham about Batman Incorporated number 6, which is very cool. This week we're taking the week off. We couldn't, you know, people are busy, so we're not getting a Don't Miss this week. But in lieu of that, Connor, myself, who else is doing it, Connor?
Roster to be determined.
Oh, roster to be determined. I love him. We're gonna be talking about the Smallville finale,
or just the whole series. We're gonna sort of wrap up Smallville. It ended this weekend, and we're gonna sort of talk about the show as a whole, our memories, our thoughts, our feelings, talking about Smallville.
So you might want to be on the lookout for that. You can go to fanboy.com and you can see when that gets posted, and you can download it and listen. If you enjoyed the past 10 years of Smallville like Connor and I did, then you'll definitely want to listen to
it. Or even watch it at any point. It'll be fun conversation.
10 years.
Yep.
The entire length of time we did iFanboy, there has been
Smallville. Wow, and they're still in high school?
No, they're adults. Yep. They have jobs. They moved on with their lives, whereas we're still talking comics.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
So that's that. And then we told you earlier in the show we're doing giveaways this month at iFanboy. You go to iFanboy.com. You can see the red post at the top listing all the giveaways. And this week we're giving away two Image Comics prize packs. The first winner is Trish Brafford, and she wins the Spawn pack with the Spawn Origins Collections Volumes 5 through 10 and Spawn Endgame Collection. So that's a lot of trades that Trish Bradford just won. And the other winner is Andrew Dietrich, who won the other Image Comics pack, which has got 3 Savage Dragon trades, 2 Invincible trades, and 2 Hack Slash trades.
Nice.
So there you go. That's a lot of trades we're just giving out to iFanboy members. We've got even more stuff coming up. You got to be in it to win it. So to be eligible, you got to be an iFanboy member. Go to iFanboy.com/store. You can find out how to do that there. And we appreciate it. There'll be more to come after this month.
Make sure that you get to iFanboy.com. You can read my Pick of the Week review. You can read my Book of the Month review. And I guess some other people are doing some stuff. Boy, it feels like I wrote a lot. And all the other stuff that's going on there. Wonderful conversations this week talking about, for example, DC's $2.99 price point. That conversation has been going on a long time. And all sorts of great art and things to look at every single day. And there's Word Balloon, the podcast, doing all sorts of comic book interviews and things like that, and as well as our own interviews that we do with our Talksplode show. And you can go to ifanboy.com/about. You can see the social networking links and how to hook up with us on the internet and other ways. We also have the video show, and last week was the email and voicemail show. It was a fun time. It was
got awkward towards the end there, though.
Yeah. I wasn't talking to you. don't know that. That's fine. We were not fighting. And then next week.
What I love is, like, if we were fighting, why would we put it in? That's what I love.
I like to think if we were, we would put it in there.
True. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
Depends if we had no outtakes. Yeah. We kind of
yeah.
have to.
If you don't have it, yeah, you have to put something in there.
Yeah.
Awkward sexual tension. That's my favorite one I ever did. Next week, the Frank Miller Show. Wow. That's. Can we even do that? Are we allowed to do that?
I don't think we are, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So, yeah. Oh, okay. Well.
We take a look at Frank Miller's career from the very first issue he did till
the very last issue he did.
Wow, that's it's a lot of stuff.
Yep. So check that out.
You can tell us editing it.
It's a lot of stuff.
And like I mentioned, you can get in touch with us by emailing us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Or write to us on Twitter, twitter.com/ifanboy.
And finally, write a review on iTunes for this show, for the Don't Miss show, for the video show, for all the shows that we're friends with, Word Balloon, and everybody. It really helps people find the show when they're looking for podcasts, and we really appreciate it. It takes you 2 seconds. It's, you know, what else can you do? Help us out. And thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Connor.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ron.
All right, cool. Good week of comics. I enjoyed this
week, guys.
Of comics. Yeah, it was nice.
It was a strong week of books. It was a fun week.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh. Goodbye.